Pray for the Jeffers, because I don't know if they've driven a snow like this before, have you? Oh! Oh, that's right. It's got front headlights out. Just tell them you were a cop. Especially when you got all them. How do you get all those in there? Yeah, I was gonna say. Okay, Proverbs. And let's go ahead and pray. Lord, I do ask you to help us understand your words. I do ask that you'd help us to, as we give overviews of each of these books, that it might spark our interest, curiosity, so that we might read it further and understand your words. In Jesus' name, amen. Okay, Proverbs is the third book chronologically in the wisdom book, a set of the wisdom books: Job, Psalms, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, Song of Solomon. And Proverbs got 31 chapters, and a lot of people, which I did for years, haven't done it lately, but I might start it up again, would read a proverb a day. Okay, so today's the fourth, so I'd read Proverbs 4. Very easy to remember that method. And tomorrow's fifth, so you read Proverbs 5. So you got most of the time, 30 days, you know, how many months of the year do you have? How many months of the year do you have 28 days? All of them. Okay, and so, it's like a trick I teach, I'd say to some kids, you believe the Bible? Oh, yeah, yeah. Do you believe Jonah swallowed a whale? Oh, yeah. You do? okay, there's you got 30 days generally, and so you got Proverbs 1 through 31, so some months you don't have to read chapter 31. And that way you go through Proverbs every month. If you do the same with Psalms has 150 Psalms, divide that by 30, you got 5 months, you go through the Psalms every 5 months. That's pretty good practice. So today'd be Psalms, either Psalms 4, 34, 64, 94, 124. Okay, and Psalms basically works in our heart. Proverbs works in our head. And Proverbs is very practical. Proverbs is a collection of pithy statements of truth and wisdom. Okay, and this is often the basis of most commercials, where they'll have one brief statement, and they'll run that through over and over and over, trying to get you and I to covet something most of the time we don't need. Okay, but a lot of times wisdom, men of wisdom, who are witty, would come up with short, pithy sayings that would be statements of truth that really get across an idea real quick. Probably one in the past was a guy named Will Rogers. Okay, there's a shrine of Will Rogers in Colorado Springs, not Roy Rogers, Will Rogers. And he often had, he was a comedian, but yet back in the day where they weren't filthy like they are now. And he would say quite a bit of statements, and sometimes Congress would get upset by the statements he would say, and he would just throw it right back in their face, you know, where he'd say something like, you know, Congress is full of laughs, and the sad thing is we got to pay for it and stuff like that. So if you learn to make short statements of truth in any given situation, and those short statements really hit an impact to some people. Okay, and you know our marquee is so small, it's hard to get. You only got 17 letters in top and a second letter, so it's really hard to get any statements up there that's short and sweet. And so sometimes you find books that will have good short statements. Here's a good one: is simplicity is truth most becoming garb. Okay, and that's true. Simplicity is truth's most becoming garb. So the idea is there is to get truth across in a very short statement, hard-hitting statement, right to get people's attention. And of course, in our age of television and internet, if you study television, not just watch it, but study it, notice that the cameras will be moving about every 2 seconds, not even 2 seconds. Boom, this one this way, back this way, back this way, back and forth all that way. They got the music in the background. They got to always be doing something because Americans' attention spans are so short that they try to get what they want to get across in 7 seconds or less. And, of course, it's getting worse nowadays. Okay, but it used to be in America. You ever read a book that was written in the 1800s? Wow. Those people had some brains. Okay, Charles Spurgeon's books, read his. Or Charles Chiniquay, read about what he wrote about the 50 years in the Church of Rome. You read some of those books in those days, and you can see that those people were just vastly intelligent. Be like one of the King James translators. He would, in the spring, take 1 month to learn another language. He'd do it in a month. And he had learned about 40 languages. I mean, that's just intelligence, okay? And the Europeans have a joke, and their joke goes, who knows one language? Americans. And we don't even know that one very well, okay? Because Europeans, if you know German, French, Spanish, and Dutch or Italian, you can go about anywhere in the country. Nico, I don't know, I think he knows 7. Philip Fry, he knew 4 or 5, some folks we know. William Tyndale, the translator of the Tyndale Bible, they said that he knew 7 languages, and Hebrew, Greek, and English, you didn't know which was his mother tongue. I mean, it's just amazing, things like that. And so what we can do is we study books or books with sayings then and read through them. And you got to read probably about 50 sayings to find a good one. Okay, and read through those and get that etched in your memory. And when there's a given time, maybe in a discussion, just throw that thing out. Okay, and it hit home. And so Proverbs is filled with those things. The author is, right off the bat, the Proverbs of Solomon. Okay, the Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel. The son of David and who? And who? Who was his mother? Solomon, the son of David, and Bathsheba. Okay, and that's something to think about. Okay, the first child of that adulterous relationship died, and Solomon was the next one. Okay, now the chapter 30 and 31 will be two different names, Gur and Lemuel, but nobody really knows who they are, and some folks just think it's another name for Solomon, but it's really hard to figure out who it is. Chapter 25, verse 1. Will be the Proverbs of Solomon, which the men of Hezekiah, king of Judah, copied out. So those were statements that he had either stated or uttered, and some other people copied them down. Okay, and that's something that's truly newsworthy. Now, we've gotten into a society where the news media has brainwashed people now that the number one most horrible thing is to be a racist. Okay, that's the number one most horrible thing. They kept saying that about the Trumpster. He's racist, he's racist, he's racist. And Clinton, if you're going to call it racism, she's no different than him. Okay, and this is all emotion. Okay, the media gets people riled up about emotion. It's not logic. It's all about emotion, and they can get a mob scene going. And, of course, Americans have become accustomed to that. And, sadly, that's where we're at. And if you look at the last several elections, it's basically the country folks against the city folks, and they've outnumbered us. Okay, the non-productive, okay, are taken from the productive. Okay, and that's where it's at. And probably the only thing that's saving us right now is the Electoral College instead of getting a popular vote because the cities have outpopulated us. Okay, and so Solomon, he's the first king of Israel, was a country boy. The second one was a country boy. That's David, Saul and David. And then Solomon is a guy of royal lineage. So, but he was a fella that prayed a very unique prayer at the beginning of his reign. Okay, so what he prayed was for, he prayed for justice and judgment. And boy, that's what you need in the political level. Now, justice doesn't mean just us, because that's how they often view it. So Solomon is the second child of David and Bathsheba. Okay, but then her grandfather, Ahithophel, okay, her grandfather, that's Bathsheba's grandfather, you'll find him in 2 Samuel chapter 11, verse 3. He held this grudge until the day he died about David and Bathsheba. And at the course close to his death is when he jumped on the bandwagon with Absalom. Okay, and so even though God forgave David in that sin, okay, he had a grandfather of Bathsheba that held onto that thing. Okay, and that's where the Bible says to us, in children be malice, in understanding be men. Okay, and so we learn to like to be children in that matter. Okay, a preview of the book. You got 31 chapters, and the first four verses basically gives the purpose of the book itself. Okay, the Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel. Two, know wisdom and instruction. To perceive the words of understanding. To receive the instruction of wisdom, justice, and judgment, and equity. To give subtlety to the simple, to the young man, knowledge and discretion. Okay, so there's the basic purposes. You'll see three very key words, knowledge, verse 4, wisdom, verse 2, and understanding, verse 2. Okay, understanding is in there. Knowledge is knowing what is true. That's what knowledge is. It's knowing what is true. Remember that Pilate asked Jesus on the day of the crucifixion, what is truth? And then he walked out. Okay, what is truth? He walked out of there. But Jesus said, you can know the truth. How can we know the truth? John 7, verse 16. If a man will, verse 17, will do his will, he shall know of the doctrine, whether it be of God or whether I speak of myself. Okay, so knowledge is knowing something. In the secular schools, you can spend thousands of dollars, 4 years of training, and at the end they come out and say, we have learned that you can't know anything for certain. I mean, that's real intelligent, spend all that money for that. Could have saved them from the start. And I was talking to one kid at Purdue years ago, and talking about absolutes, and I said, two and two are absolutely four. He said, well, my friend could prove it wrong. Yeah, you may think so. But if you got two apples and somebody adds you two more apples, you're going to say you got four. You can think you're smart, but it's not going to work. That's the glorious thing about the Bible is knowledge. It's to know something. It's to know that you're on your way to heaven. The other faith religions don't have that. It's all guesswork. Okay, knowledge is knowing what is true. Wisdom is knowing how to apply that truth. Okay, that's very significant. If you lack wisdom, ask of God. James 1 verse 5. So wisdom is knowing how to live the truth. If you would look in James chapter 3 verse 13, a person can get book knowledge, but it doesn't do him any good unless he knows what to do with it. James chapter 3 verse 13 to 18 gives the contrast between worldly wisdom and the wisdom of God. Knowing how to apply what is true. That's wisdom. James chapter 3, verse 13. Who is a wise man and endued with knowledge among you? Let him show out of a good conversation his works with meekness of wisdom. Okay, with meekness of wisdom, that does not go with the secular education. I mean, they're going to show you all their diplomas. I mean, they're going to brag about all that knowledge. That I sat in a desk and paid this much money to be smart. Okay, and a lot of them aren't real smart. That's what the Bible calls heady. Okay, we're not against the education. We should get it. We should try to learn as much as you can. Okay, but recognize it's just getting from somebody else. Here we are 6,000 years from Adam. I doubt we have original thoughts. It's just repeating some things that other people taught us. Verse 14, but if you have bitter envying and strife in your hearts, glory not and lie not against the truth. That will go with the world's wisdom. This wisdom descendeth not from above, but is earthly, sensual, devilish. For where envying and strife is, there is confusion in every evil work. But the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, and easy to be entreated. Easy to be entreated, somebody would feel comfortable to ask them any question. Full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality, and without hypocrisy. And the fruit of righteousness is sown in a peace of them that make peace. Okay, and so wisdom is knowing how to apply what is true. Knowledge is knowing what is true. Understanding is knowing why the idea is true. Understanding is getting into what the Bible calls inspiration. Now, a lot of the teachers of the Bible, people believe the Bible, good or bad, whatever, they'll limit inspiration to the giving of the Bible, the writing of the Bible, or somebody speaking the Bible in the original autographs or whatnot. But that's not inspiration. Inspiration is when the Spirit of God illuminates your mind that you might understand what is said, and you walk away and say, now that makes sense. And that's the purpose of preaching. It's not to impress people with knowledge. It's to impart the knowledge. So when you walk out after the service, okay, now I know what he was trying to get across. And it made sense to me. When it makes sense, that's when inspiration occurs. The Spirit of God has gotten involved, illuminated the mind to understand the Scriptures. If you would, look in Nehemiah 8, verse 8. Nehemiah chapter 8, if you got a good reference Bible, it'll be page 777. Triple sevens. Now, I didn't plan those things. I wish I could say I did, but I didn't. 777 is the pattern of a public service. 666 is chapter 13 in the reference Bible. I just looked at some of those things. And I thought, wow, that's kind of neato. Okay, Nehemiah 7, or page 777, Nehemiah 8. You got the first eight verses. Eight is the number for new beginnings. And we'll see the word understanding in the second verse about 84.5% into it. Okay, and so there's understanding. And you keep reading down and you'll see that the people were attentive to the reading in verse 3 at the end. And then in verse 7, that's about 82% further into it. It caused the people to understand the law. And verse 8 is a three-point outline. So they read in the book, in the law of God, distinctly. So they read it. And gave the sense. That makes sense. And caused them to understand the reading. That's inspiration right there. If you go with the definition of the Bible in Job 32, verse 8, it's when the Spirit of God illuminates our mind that we might understand. That's the purpose, that's the pattern of a public service, be it Sunday school, be it preaching time, be it anywhere, that you're getting people to look at the Bible. And, you know, you go to stand outside the average church. Stand outside the average church and watch people walk in. If it's a charismatic church, you'll see guys that's got permed hair, and they'll walk in. like that, because it's an effeminate movement. And they won't even be carrying Bibles in. You won't see them carry anything in. NIV, New King James, they won't be carrying stuff in. Go to old Joel Osteen's church and watch them walk in and walk out. They won't be carrying anything in. They follow the bouncing ball on the screen, you know, as they're, you know, singing. And whatever, and, or somebody else is singing or rocking to it. And then they're put the Bible or lack of Bible or the psychology up on the screen. And those people, how do they know they've got that written right on the screen? They're not able to check them out. People that go to those places about like going to a gun range without a gun. It's like going to a basketball court without a basketball. I mean, that's just crazy. We're supposed to watch what it says in the scriptures. And besides, the more of your senses that you get involved, the more you're able to understand. We only remember, on the average, 11% of what we hear. And so if you're like me, I'm more of a sight learner. If I can actually see it, you remember about 80% of what you see. This is why that when we are introduced to people, we remember the face, but we don't remember the name. Most of the times, because we're not paying attention. Okay, and the thing is, we don't remember what we hear. You have to really concentrate when people tell you their name and run it through your mind or repeat it to them, making sure you heard it correctly. And then you got to consciously in your mind try to etch it in your mind. Or you can do the mega memory method. Okay, where there's some outstanding character in their face, and then you hear the name, and then you put some crazy thing, you know, my name's Bob, and then you think that, oh, he's got Bob sticking out his ears. So the next time you see the guy, you see fishing hooks and Bob's coming out of his ears, and you remember, oh, his name is Bob. And this is one of the ways to remember things is by goofy thoughts or goofy ideas. But then you're going around looking at people, oh, he's got a big wazoo, so I'm going to think something about his nose. Okay, and so his nose, or you can say his name's Matt. What's Matt? That's a guy with no arms and no legs sitting on the ground. Okay, and so you think about all those things. Okay, Bob is a guy with no arms, no legs in the water. So, I mean, you just run all those things, but a lot of times this is how you try to memorize things in school. If you have a hard time in school, put it in an alliterated thing, and then put some goofy words to it, and when you get to the test, you'll be surprised how it comes up. That's how Jerry Lewis, the basketball player, Jerry Lewis, he played for New York Knicks years ago. Somebody help me out. Boy, I'm really dating myself. I forget the guy's name. But he had memorized, which is a crazy thing to memorize, the entire book of The Exorcist. He played for Jerry Lucas, played for New York Knicks in the past. And then there was a guy named Lorraine that would get on these talk shows. And before the show, there'd be like 300 people there. Before the show start, he would say, your name, your telephone number, your name, your telephone number. And he would take the time to go through all 300 people. And during the show, they'd have somebody stand up and he'd say, your name is, and he'd tell them the telephone number. And what he was doing is memorizing something that was outstandingly goofy. And when he saw that individual, it would trigger that and it'd trigger his memory. Okay? And so those are some ways we remember things. But when you got a Bible and you're looking at it, when you're actually looking at what the Bible says, then you are involving your sight and you tend to remember things better. How many times are you looking for something in the Bible and you remember, I know it's right on this part of the page, about this part up, and then you're flipping through and then you're, oh yeah, there it is, right there. Okay, and so that's why we want to get as many of our senses involved when we study the Bible or read the Bible. This is understanding. Now if you put all three of those together, knowledge, wisdom, and understanding. Knowledge is studying about flying. It's studying about airplanes. Okay, wisdom is the act of flying. It's maybe playing the flying thing on a computer where you're actually practicing in some way. Wisdom is actually getting in the plane and being taught to flying and practicing. Understanding is when you understand the shape of the wing and how wind passes over the wing. And because of the shape of the wing, the air somehow creates lift. And here you got a heavy machine that somehow comes up off the ground. You understand aerodynamics. You understand how the air flows over the plane and what creates the lift. I mean, it's always amazing to me to watch them big birds as they fly along. You know, and you fly over the ocean. And I mean, when you're flying either one direction or the other direction, you know, going to Australia, it's the longest night of the day you ever in your life. Or coming back, it's the longest day. You're seeing the sun because you're moving right along. Okay, and so that's knowledge, wisdom, and understanding. Understanding, like I said, is a byproduct of inspiration. Okay, the other one is instruction in verse 2. Instruction is the act of teaching. Instruction is knowing how to clearly explain something. Okay, instruction is taking whoever you're teaching, trying to take them from point A to point B. Now, a lot of times, you get somebody where they got point A, and then they see a rabbit, and they go chasing this rabbit, and then they see another rabbit, and they go chasing this rabbit, and you're trying to think, where are we at here? I don't like going from point A, the scenic route, going over here, coming back over in this direction, come over here, back over here, and then get finally to point B. Man, it took forever to do that. Let's get this thing done and quick. Point A, point B, point C, straight up, right to the matter, knowing what a person believes or knows, and then taking what they know to give them something that you want them to know. Okay, that's instruction. That's the art of teaching. And there is an art to it. Okay, there's an art to try to keep people's attention. And, you know, I'm not one of these going running back and forth and all that kind of stuff. But you want to try to keeps people's attention with using the things of life that you're dealing with and trying to get that across to anybody as far as their viewpoint. The art of teaching is explaining an idea with the knowledge of the listener, and then you take analogies, similitudes, okay, are the best method to teach people. Analogies and similitudes. That's using the words like and as. So you take the knowledge, you discover the knowledge that an individual has, and then you take some of that knowledge and apply it to whatever spiritual truth you're trying to get across. Psalms 32, verse 8. It says this, I will instruct thee and teach thee in the way which thou shalt go. I will guide thee with mine eye. Then it says, be ye not as the horse, or as the mule, which have no understanding, whose mouth must be held in with bit and bridle, lest they come near unto thee. Okay, so if you look at a horse, a great big animal, okay, in one way it's very intelligent, but in another way it's not real intelligent. Because you think a great big animal, it can take its hooves and just kick the door open and then go anywhere he wants. But yet, if you take that horse and you get a pin and you walk him around the edge of the pin about seven times, in that horse's mind, that's where he thinks he's supposed to stay. Years ago, I watched Jeff Adams break a horse. Oh, that was amazing to watch. We taped it. Jeff Adams was a PBI graduate. He was going to go down to Argentina. He went down there, and then he's out west now somewhere. But a lot of times people think of breaking. He said, I've broken the horse the way a lot of people break them. You know, you put the saddle on it, you get on it, it bucks you off, you get back on it, you get on it, kicks off, bucks you back on it, back and forth. He said, that's a good way to get killed. And so he showed how to do it the wise way. And what he did for about the first 30 or 45 minutes, he just made that horse, spooked that horse, and that horse ran around the whole pen. And after about 30 or 40 minutes, the horse is in the corner looking at him. He said, now I will turn and look at, I'll look at that horse. That horse is looking at me. I will turn and walk away, and that horse will follow me. And he turned around and walked away, and here comes that horse right behind him. I mean, it's fascinating to watch. He explained the whole thing, and there's a couple lost men watching it, and he was explaining this is what salvation is like too. And so that horse followed right up into him, so then he just turned around and just started putting his hands on the horse. And all he did was he just put his hands all over that horse. And the horse, ooh, and then he would just put all his hands all over that horse everywhere, and then he'd kind of jump on the side, and he'd jump down, and he'd jump on the side and jump back down. And then he'd put a blanket on the side of the horse. The horse didn't like it. He'd pull the blanket off, and he'd put the blanket back on, and he'd pet that horse. He'd pet him on the rump, on the back, on the shoulders, on the face. He'd be petting that horse everywhere. And he did that for about 30 minutes. After about 30 minutes, and then he would jump on his stomach on the side of the horse, and that horse, ooh, and then he'd jump off. He wouldn't let the horse react, and then he'd jump on the side again, and then he would be on the side, and then he'd be rubbing the horse all over the place. And then he would stay on that horse. And then eventually he'd be sitting on the horse. And then he'd be petting that horse all over the place, and then all of a sudden he'd just tap that horse, and the thing would start walking. I mean, it took him about an hour and a half to do that, but he didn't want to spook the horse. But when we, you know, watch the old westerns, what do we watch? We watch them and they buck them and they buck them and they finally break them and all that stuff. Yeah, and the guy's thrown off about 10 times. And I don't know if they had chiropractors back in those days. But that was an amazing thing to watch. Okay, and so he says to us, be ye not as the horse. So instruction, the art of teaching. Okay, it's knowing how to clearly explain an idea, trying to lead a person from point A to point B. Okay, the next, another thing that Proverbs is for justice and judgment. Justice and judgment, that's verse 3. That's to be just. Okay, that's knowing right and wrong. Noah was a just man. In Leviticus, it talks about a just weight. Okay, a just weight, that implies honesty in business affairs. A just weight. The reason why they'd have just weights is because they weighed their money. Okay, we don't have money per se. Not real honest to goodness money. We have paper currency. Money of value can be weighed. Gold, silver. Okay, and so that's what in the old days they would do as a just weight. And that's very important to God. But with us, we would say God intends us to be honest in our business affairs. You see, people don't understand inflation. Inflation is a hidden tax. Inflation is a hidden way that the bankers steal your livelihood without you and I knowing it. That's what inflation is. It's somebody arbitrarily deciding the value of currency, and then they just raise and lower the value of the currency depending on their whims. And people don't see that. They don't see inflation. It's just a very subtle thing. Okay? The criminal in the jail, he's a piker compared to the bankers. Okay? With taxations right in front of you, that's outright theft. Inflation is a hidden theft. Okay? But people don't understand it in our culture because we don't understand money of value. The dollar, the 5, the 10, the money, the currency in our pockets don't mean anything. There was a time we'd go to Australia and I'd give them $100. This time around, I could give them $100 and they'd give me 130 Aussie dollars. Okay, but then about 4 years ago, when I gave them 100 US dollars, I only got 90 Aussie dollars. It's because of that fluctuation of that currency. Okay, and some people who know how that's going to fluctuate up and down can make money by doing that. Okay, but what that's fiat currency. Aussie money's plastic. You can put it in a washer and it's not going to ruin it. Okay, but that's what fiat currency, and we don't understand. The fiat currency is a very subtle way that bankers are stealing our livelihood. And we don't even see them doing it. Okay, and that's what the Bible first tells us. That's justice and judgment. Verse 4, equity. Equity. Okay, let's try this Proverbs. Proverbs 17:26. This is a common thing in our culture. Equity. The common word is equality. Equal rights. I got my rights.
You got your rights? Yeah. Spell that rights for me. R-I-O-T-S. Rights.
Okay. Yeah, that's how you spell it. That's about right. Okay. Any group of people demanding their rights are foolish in two ways. They're foolish to put themselves, to label themselves in a group. That's socialism. Gay rights, women rights, black rights, Mexicans, Americans, you know, whatever. Okay, you're allowing somebody to label you. Okay, and the thing is I'm a sovereign individual. What are you? Sovereign individual. Sovereign man living on the land. Okay, you say, well, you're white. That don't look white to me. That looks white. It's like a black man says to a white man, he says, you call us colored folk. But when you get scared to death, you turn pale. And when you are afraid, you turn yellow. And when you get bruised, you turn blue. Don't sound like to me, I'm colored. Man, it sounds like to me, you're colored. And when you get sunburned, you turn pink. And that's true. The idea of colored folk, that's a legal term, is what that is. But the government can't give you rights. Can't give me rights. I don't want their rights. The only way the government can give a select group rights is by stealing it from another. Okay? It's an all men's group. Okay, an all men's group where women said, I want my rights, I want to be in the men's group. Okay, how do they give the women their rights? Steal it from the men. They have to take it from the men. Okay, so you got girls playing on guys' teams. Well, can guys play on girls' teams? No, they're not going to allow that. Well, today I feel like a girl. This is a society we've become. Proverbs chapter 17, 26, it says, also to punish the just is not good. Okay, so that's pretty clear, right? To punish just people is not good, nor to strike princes for equity. To strike, go on strike. Go on strike to who? Princes, government. To go on strike, the government, for equality is never a desire for equality. It's a desire for special favors. That's what it always is. And nothing's going to change that. Okay? If a black man has a business up in Gary, and he will only cut the hair of red-headed black people, and that's all he's going to allow in that building, he's got a right to do that. If a white man walks in and says, I want you to cut my hair, he said, take a hike. If the white guy goes and says, I want my rights, he gets to go take a hike. I will defend the black man in that case because that's his right as an owner of a business. Okay? Nothing wrong with that. You say it's discrimination. Tough apples, that's how it goes. A business owner has the right to discriminate of who he wants to walk in that door. If that's his property, he owns the building, that's his right. People don't understand that. Okay, and so we need to defend that and explain that to people. Now, when it gets on federal level, that's a whole different ballgame. You say, well, he's not going to have good business that way. That's his problem. You say it's not smart. Well, if he wants to be dumb, let him be dumb. Okay, if he only wants to serve red-headed, left-handed people in his store, that's his choice. And people in our country have lost that. You see, the idea, oh, when we got Obama, all racism is going to go away. No, it's increased it, hasn't it? Why? It's because the news media and the government entities are the greatest promoters of racism than any entity in this country. Racial quotas is an increase of racism. People get mad about those things. Okay, and so this verse says it is not good, and it's not wise either, to go to some entity saying, I want my... Can you imagine Japanese coming into America wanting equal rights to get in the NBA? Wow. A sumo wrestler in the NBA. Who's going to watch the NBA with a... Boom. Jason. One guy will watch it. He always takes one. I mean, they're not going to scream for their rights. And if you think about it logically, who demands equal rights? Mentally, a person who thinks they're lesser than somebody. Why would you want equal rights if you feel that you're superior? You say, feel you're superior? Yeah, everybody's got some unique traits that makes you superior. And everybody's got some traits that makes us inferior. Okay, and so this idea of equity, America, we just need to understand that when any time anybody is demanding equal rights, they're not demanding equal rights. They want special favors. They want to be put ahead of the class, and they want to be above everybody else by special favors. Okay, another thing, a purpose for Proverbs is discretion. Okay, chapter 2, verse 10 and 11, discretion. I think it was at the end of chapter 1, verse 4, discretion. Okay, that's discernment. Discretion is discernment between seeing counterfeits from error. Okay, so that's some of the purpose of Proverbs. Haven't even got into the Proverbs, but we'll stop right there. Lord, thank you for your words, and I do pray and help us to understand, and I pray that you'd help us to be faithful to your words, help us to study and to learn, to develop some short sayings that are truthful, that might encourage people to understand some things, help us to be able to explain the things of the Bible in a very clear and concise fashion. And people might, okay, I get it. I see, I understand. Okay, then, now that makes sense. I pray that you'd help us to be students of the Word, that we might allow the Spirit of God to teach through us. In Jesus' name, amen.